Growing up, I loved playing computer games, but I have not found something in adulthood that scratches that same itch. Video games don't do it. I can't use that controller. It's just not it for me. But oh my goodness, I am so glad I recently started playing June's Journey. Okay, June's Journey is like I Spy meets Carmen Sandiego, meets The Sims, meets horror movies. It's so wild and it's so, so fun to play. June's Journey is a hidden object mystery game with a captivating detective story taking you back to the glamour of the 1920s with a diverse cast of characters. Each new scene takes you further through a thrilling murder mystery story that sets the main protagonist, June Parker, on a quest to solve the murder of her sister and uncover her family's many secrets. June is fabulous. She has a fabulous little hat and feather in her cap. She's at this family estate on this gorgeous island that you can decorate, which you know that I love to do. And then as you're going, you go into different rooms of the house. You find clues that are going to lead to the suspicious murder of June's sister and brother-in-law. It's so dark. Like, you're looking for clues inside of a murder scene photo. But also, all I want to do is find the trophy and the riding crop and the muddy footprint that might be a clue about, wait, was there another person there? It's so intriguing. It's so fun. I love playing it. At the end of the day, just sitting on the couch, you know, that state of mind where you're not ready to go to bed yet. You don't want to be watching TV anymore. It's sort of just background noise. I want to be looking around my little island for clues. And that's why I love having June's Journey. Right now, I'm in the chapter where we are really uncovering some salacious information. There seems to have been a third person there the night of the murder. And that is not what we believed at the beginning. So, you know, I'm ready to figure out more about this mystery third person because I think it might be the key to everything. And so you better believe I'm about to dive back in, and you can do just the same. Escape reality and immerse yourself in the world of June Parker. Download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android.
Okay, listeners, we have I won't say fun episode.
Sure. Some of it is not fun, but honestly, some of it is fun.
Some of it is fun and some of it is very not fun. So get ready for a roller coaster of an episode. You're going to feel all sorts of things.
Oh, we're going to take you on a journey.
But before we do that, we got to shout out some of our new patrons. We have a new vessel head joining us, and that is Isaac Cole. Isaac, welcome aboard. Thank you so much for being here.
Welcome aboard, Isaac. And welcome home, should I say, to the newest members of Toni Collette's inner circle. Yeah. Toni fucking Collette's inner circle. It is home here. So welcome home to this great group of new patrons. They are Elaine Granito, Caitlin H., Aaron Nelson, Kayla Moore, Haley Runco, Aaron Hunter, Polly, Brendan Kooks, Jordan A., Kelly N., Kimberly Cox, Carrie Nappel, Kateri Kavanaugh, Aaron, CN Dandelion, Lindsay Thomas, Ellen, Melissa Eisenman, Catherine Desai, Jade Foster, Liliana Topet, Sarah V, Heejin Gregory, Kate, and Kevin McGonigal. Wow. How?
Holy smokes.
Welcome, welcome home to the circle.
Lots of people coming home.
You love to see people coming home, especially in this beginning of the holiday season. Oh,
this is home's where you want to be right now. Cozy.
It's where the heart is, and it's where we all are.
It's where the heart is. It's where Toni is. And we also have a couple people that have upgraded. They are Trice Sanders and Leslie Jane Mace. Thank you guys so much. Thank you, everybody. We appreciate your support so goddamn much. It really means so much to us. And
it really does.
If you want to join our Patreon, you can go to patreon.com/TSDW podcast. We have an episode on Squid Game coming up, which we just recorded. Holy shit. You're not going to want to miss it if you are too scared to watch it, because it's I don't have to tell you this. It's the most popular show that's ever happened on Netflix. It is talked about.
Yeah. Even if what you're too scared about is you're too scared to be sad like me, and I just get to hear about it without sinking into the deep despair that is
Squid Game.
The state of Squid Game. Yeah. So you better freaking check that out.
Better freaking check that out. And until then, you better check this episode out.
You better
out.
Check it out. You better stay on the line. If you thought about just listening to this part and then stop in the episode, I respect your choice. Pretty weird, but I think you better stay on the line.
I think you should stay on the line. Enjoy.
This is Emily,
Henley,
and Sammy. And you're listening to Too Scary, Didn't Watch.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Too Scary, Didn't Watch, the horror movie recap podcast for those too scared to watch for themselves. I'm Emily, and I'm too scared to watch scary.
I'm Henley, and I'm also too scared to watch scary movies.
I'm Sammy, and I like watching scary movies, so I watch them so that you don't have to, and I tell you all about them, because I know you're curious.
Ugh, we love her for it.
Yay!
Yeah.
It's a gift. It's a service.
It is a gift to all of us, and we do appreciate it. What's up with us? Someone recently asked on our Instagram why we don't ask if something scary happened to us this week, and I feel like the world is still scary. That's the reason why we stopped doing it. Because we're like, oh, the world is like sad and scary, and it feels weird to be like, yeah, something scary happened this week. Everything. So that's just why. But also, what I was going to say is something scary did happen to me this week.
Okay, let's hear.
And scary in like a mortality type of way.
Oh, no.
Oh.
Which is that, and you guys already know this, actually, because I texted you. But a good friend of mine installed a stripper pole in her house recently.
Yeah.
which totally rules, and I think I will get one at some point. But I was so excited. It's a great workout, and it's like fun and cool. Anyway, I was so excited to go over and try her pole because I was like, I mean, I gotta see what the deal is. She's been posting all these videos; she's loving it. So I went over and I tried it, and it is really fun. It's great. And I did it for 2 minutes trying things. First of all, I'm not nearly as strong as I thought I was, so that is scary. Number two, I pulled a muscle.
Yeah, of course you did.
Of course I did. And I was like, oh my God.
It's new muscles that you're not used to using.
Stripper poles are extremely
so
difficult. You have to have insane core. Like, you have to be so strong.
Yeah, and I thought that I did, and I don't. I pulled, it's like on my oblique. It hurts so bad, you guys. And I so quickly was like, you can't just like throw your body around anymore.
Mm-hmm.
No.
In life.
You got to be prepared to exercise.
Oh my God. I know. Joel was like, did you stretch? I was like, no, I didn't stretch. What are you talking about? No. It really hurts, you guys. And I don't love facing that reality, but I will heal and be prepared that I will also get a pole someday and you guys can try it, but you should stretch first. Just so you know, learn from me.
Yeah. We were learning our lesson early. This is great. I'm sorry for your soreness, but we will
thank
learn
you.
From this.
And thank you for offering me muscle relaxers if I need them.
Of course. Yes.
I might.
I've got them for my TMJ.
Do they work? Do muscle relaxers actually do anything?
They do. They do. They just make you real groggy. So I don't take them very often.
Because they relax all your muscles, right? That's the only way they would work. They don't know which ones to relax, right?
I think. I mean, I don't totally know how they work. But yeah, when I first was prescribed them, the doctor said to take them 3 times a day, which is like absolutely insane. And I was taking them at work and I started auditory hallucinating and kept thinking someone was coming up behind me and would jerk around and be like, who's there? There'd be nobody there. I was like, I can't fucking take these 3 times a day. This is crazy.
Wait, you know what? That same thing happened to me. Tim and I, one time, we took Ambien and we thought someone was in the room with us. We had like a shared experience of thinking someone was in the room.
Oh, no.
Wait, are these accidental ghost encounters? And
maybe.
I'm just dismissing them?
Yeah. If both of you together saw the same person, I'd be like, maybe there was a person in your room.
No. We didn't see the same person. We just were both in bed and we felt like there was someone else there. We didn't see anything. It was more of a feeling. Anyway, I don't know.
It was a ghost. It was a ghost. Maybe.
Probably a ghost. What's up with you guys?
I don't really have much of anything to talk about this week, except my hair is falling out so intensely. After you give birth, your hair falls out, and I've entered the hair falling out stage, and it is out of control. And there's a thing that is a problem, actually, where your hair can get wrapped around your baby's limbs.
What?
like snakes? And like as if it like travels?
And it's called a hair tourniquet, and it can actually like really be really painful
like
for
mess
them.
Mess with their blood flow.
Uh-huh. It can be really painful.
Like after it falls out of your head,
it gets
around the baby.
Yeah, it gets like wrapped around their finger or something, and it can be really painful for them. So I'm so vigilant. I'm on constant alert, like stressed, because my hair is fucking everywhere and it's falling out insane amounts. And I think I'm just gonna cut it all off. And maybe this is why people get mom haircuts. Is this why people get mom haircuts? Is because of this? Because of hair tourniquets? And also, if anyone has any like tips about what to do, like I'm gonna be bald in like 10 days at this rate, so I'm stressed.
Having kids is crazy, man. There's so many things that they don't tell you.
It's
all like,
motherhood is
fucking
insane.
Hair tourniquets. Never heard that before in my goddamn life.
I'm sorry that I feel like I only talk about mom things now, but it's the only thing I have to talk about.
Henley,
that's it.
If any one of the things that you've experienced in the last, let's say, 9 months plus 3 months, a year, if any of the things that you've experienced in the last year happened to me, it would be any one of those would be the only thing I talked about. If my hair was falling out and making tourniquets around a baby's fingers, I would be like screaming it to everyone I know. Are you kidding me? Of course you could talk about it. That's fucking crazy.
Well, okay. So part of the reason why it makes me so nervous too is because when I was pregnant, I was in the pharmacy and this man rushed into the pharmacy and he was so stressed and asked if he could cut the line because he needed to buy nail clippers because he said that a hair had wrapped around his baby's finger and he needed to cut it off, and he was having like a panic attack about it. And at the time I was like,
why was he buying nail clippers?
Because I guess
to cut the hair,
he needed like little clippers to like cut the hair.
Oh, like the little tiny scissors.
Yeah. And so at the time I was like, that guy's just like not sleeping well. Like there's no way that's actually like a thing, you know, like he's like having a moment, like sure, he cut the line, like it can't be that serious. Now that it's happening to me, I get it. It's stressful.
It's serious.
It's serious. Yeah. Anyway, that's the only thing I have to talk about are hair tourniquets.
Well, that's pretty crazy.
That's pretty crazy.
Well, yeah.
Sammy, what about you?
Top that, Sammy.
I had something kind of scary happen to me this week, too. In acupuncture, I had a needle hit a blood vessel and now I have a big bruise on my wrist.
Holy shit.
And I just have never had that happen before. It didn't hurt. And ow. I honestly felt really good after the acupuncture still. Like it was still a very nice, relaxing session. I love my acupuncturist. She's the best. But yeah, I was just like, oh.
Did you know it was happening when it happened? Like, could you feel it hit something?
It felt a little itchy, but no, it didn't hurt.
Huh.
Itchy because maybe, does it like cause more pressure under your skin?
Maybe. Yeah. I could feel that it was a little different than the other ones, but I was like, oh, yeah. I mean, it always feels a little bit like a needle in your skin. So it's like, I'm like, okay, yeah, I mean, there's a needle in there, so I'm going to feel it a little bit.
Ow.
But
and then
it's fine and it's going to heal right up and everything's going to be fine. But it was a little scary. But no, it was great. And then the other thing I wanted to say is that, I mean, by the time this comes out, it'll already have happened. But Succession season 3 starts tonight and I just can't fucking wait.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
I forgot that's tonight. Holy shit.
That's
tonight.
Tonight. I mean, tonight. If you're listening to the podcast, it was 3 days ago. But for us, it's tonight. Yeah, so I'm thrilled about that. And The other scary thing that happened to me this week was that I watched a scary movie, and it was the Poughkeepsie Tapes, which came out in, well, 2007 and 2014. We'll talk about that in a second. It was directed by John Eric Dowdle, written by John Eric Dowdle and Drew Dowdle, starring Chbosky, Ben Mesmer, Lou George, Samantha Robson, and Ivar Brogger. It is available on our very favorite, Shudder.com. Mm-hmm. And we have a guest here to talk about it with us. He is an author and the co-host of the podcast Ghost Town. It's Jason Horton. Woo! Thank you for being here, Jason.
Hello. I have no pill stories to offer or anything exciting like that. My life is perfect. Everything's in balance. I'm just getting younger and wealthier as we're sitting here speaking.
Oh my God.
Nothing to contribute on that end. Yeah, I guess I'm blessed, I suppose. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here. I'm inspired by this Benjamin Button.
Yeah, young
life.
Younger and wealthier. Hell yeah.
Jason, tell us a little bit about your kind of relationship with horror and spooky things in general. How'd you get interested in scary?
I've always been terrified. I mean, people that are listening that are scared of horror movies, I always have, but I always watch them and then I regret it. So I mean, I've always been, you know, kind of drawn by them for the same reason a lot of people are. And I kind of force myself to watch them. Sometimes it'll just be one and done. I'm like, that's it. Never going back. I'm good. And then sometimes I'll revisit it. And I love filming locations in general. So like recently I went and checked out, I went to the house, you know, we're in the poster for the movie Insidious. And, you know, I always go back and some Nightmare on Elm Street spots that I didn't hit. And Halloween, obviously, and I put those on my Instagram. So I love that aspect of just, especially living in Los Angeles, there's just a lot of really great, great spots here. And then I just, you know, I love weird, dark history, I'd say. And then under that would be, you know, the haunted and the paranormal and the true crime and all that. And, you know, what I talk about in the podcast and just general interest in historic locations, abandoned places. So like that kind of dark esoteric stuff would be like the top of the pyramid for the pyramid scheme. That is whatever it is we're doing here. That's where it is. That's where my downline is. So,
Awesome. Did you watch any scary movies when you were a kid that just haunt you to this day?
Oh, I mean, there'd be weird ones from the '70s, like Tourist Trap, like these weird, Black Christmas, all those like,
Black Christmas. We did that. So scary.
Yeah. Any of that like stuff that's like, whatever, like Italian, or it's just, it's the 1970s. It's inherently terrifying. It's like, you know, is anything safe? They make these, you know, it's like everything's very dangerous and dark and, you know, they're just very avant-garde. So things like that were always scary. I mean, when it came out, forget it. I was like, this is absolutely terrifying. Like general stuff, but I've always liked stuff like Halloween. I've always kind of liked, cause I kind of saw that as more of, I don't know. There was something about it where that was somebody was coming to, is that it's a horror movie? Yes. But it's also just like a thriller. Somebody's coming to get you, but these things that are kind of strange and there's dreams and there's clowns, forget it. Like any of that kind of stuff.
Serial killer.
Visually. Yeah. Like very, like, I don't know. Like, yeah. Like terrifying clowns, things like shape shifting and stuff like that, that you feel like you're not like kind of in control of. I've always been extremely, and still, to this day, are still very terrifying, but I will go and I will watch them. I'm kind of drawn to it and stuff. So here I am and here we are.
So you don't like necessarily being scared. I'm wondering if you like go and do things in person and stuff. If you like haunted houses or that kind of thing, do you like?
No way.
Okay.
No freaking way. No way. One, a lot of it is also, it's like going and doing it. And then, you know, I don't know. I just feel like that's also for the ghost town. I talk about like the bad things that have happened in haunted houses, especially like I grew up in like New York and New Jersey. So like there's haunted houses that are like great adventure, things that have happened where people like die, because it's just, it's asbestos and there's just I feel like there's just like holes everywhere, like things are not, like things are not safe. So yeah, I'm just not, I don't like any of that.
Fair.
No, thanks. But I will go, like, I will go, like, you know, like if there was an abandoned thing, like I'll go check all, like that out. Things that are actually probably dangerous. But as far as things that, like, you know, their job is just to like scream at you. I just don't want to be screamed at.
I hate that too.
I don't want to pay to be screamed at.
Yeah, there's there's often usually clowns at those things too, you know. Clowns, I feel like, are featured heavily in those haunted house experiences. So yeah, that would not.
And you know, one of them, in any given time, one of them is like, they're like, I mean, this would be a good time to start being a murderer, like I've been planning on doing. Because I'm already like not, like, you don't know who, you know what I mean? Like, it's like, that's out there. I know that it is.
So have fun. And then, you, if that's in your head, you're not going to want to pay for that experience either. You're not going to want to pay to get
murdered.
Also
very, very cheap. That's how I stay so wealthy. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to. No, thanks.
No, thanks. Wait, Sammy, do you like haunted houses?
No, I was going to say, I agree. I like strangely love horror movies, but I can't handle it when someone is jumping out at me in real life. No, I do not like it.
Because also I feel like the lines are very blurry about whether they can touch you or not. Because I feel like they're not supposed to touch you, but then they always end up touching you.
They always do. Yeah, I feel
they
like.
They always end up.
Always? Like,
I mean, I don't, I've only been like twice because I fucking hate it. But I feel like
I feel like I've been to a lot of haunted houses and they always like, they do. They always. It's like target the person who seems like this most scared.
And it's always me.
Yeah.
Well, it'd probably be you guys if we went together.
Yeah. That's why I can't do this.
No, Henley, you would maybe seem brave. I feel like you'd put on a brave face.
I would put on a brave face because all my, yeah, my Capricorn, like practical, like the part of me that would get killed if I was ever actually in a dangerous situation, that would turn on. And I'd be like, I don't believe you.
There are some though where like I feel like there are certain haunted house experiences where the deal is like they can touch you and they can like take you away.
Yeah, I've been to those.
Right.
Henley, what?
I don't know why. I don't know why. I feel like it's a thing that we would do.
That's a real murderer's haven, because they can take you away and then your friends are like, oh, they're just, that's part of the thing. And it's like then they, you could get murdered.
You could be murdered.
Even just like as a woman in the world, I'm like, don't take me away. Like, what? Don't, you can't ever take me somewhere away from the people I know in the dark.
Yeah.
I'm not going to pay you to do that.
No, I'm not fucking paying anybody for that. No, thank you. All right. Well, let's talk a bit about the Poughkeepsie tapes. We got some trivia. Let me give you a little stats. It has 67 on Rotten Tomato, 6 on IMDb. And it's the same filmmakers as Above, So Below, okay, and Quarantine, which was the American remake of Wreck. About the like release drama about this movie. So it, I guess, was finished and ready to go in 2007. It premiered at Tribeca and got picked up by MGM, and they were getting ready to release it in 2008, like a wide theater release. And it like had trailers attached to other movies. So people were like, oh, this movie is coming out. And then they pulled it at the last minute, I guess, and kept it like on the shelf until 2014, when they did like a very brief VOD release. And then they pulled it from that again. And then it was only in 2017, like fully released on like DVD and not, still not in theater. It never went to theaters, but.
Did they give a reason?
Yeah. Wait, why?
No, they never gave a reason, but people think it's because it's so gruesome.
Oh shit. Wait, I've never heard of this movie. Maybe that's why. Cause it like didn't have a big thing, but my immediate thought is, oh my God, imagine being an actor in that movie. What if this was like your first big thing and you're like, my movie's coming out, and then they just don't do it?
That would be stressful. And for the filmmakers too, of just like working on it and then being like, oh fuck. Oh fuck.
Oh fuck. Yeah, that sucks.
You kind of laughed when you said it's so gruesome. Is it not actually that gruesome, or is it like, what do you think? Is that a legit reason?
I think it's a legit recent. It's pretty gross. It doesn't show tons, but it like describes in detail a lot of very gross things. Yes.
And Jason, you picked this movie. Yes. Do you have any sort of particular attachment to this movie?
Yes. This is not, I'm not picking this because I was like, oh, this movie's really good and really freaky. I'm picking it because I used to live in Poughkeepsie. So that is my connection to it. And like, again, I'm very connected to locations and stuff. So I grew up in, before I moved to California, in the Hudson Valley. And it's interesting when I tell people like, oh, what part of upstate? It's like an hour from New York City. I don't know. It depends on where you are. But I went to high school like in Newburgh, and no one knows where Newburgh is. When I say Poughkeepsie, everyone knows, oh yeah, I know Poughkeepsie. I was like, how does so many people know? And I think Poughkeepsie has been, it's been used, I think, as Hackensack, which I was born in, New Jersey. I feel like those are like towns that people mention as a like reference. And so I think all of that kind of adds to this movie, because it's like a pretty like interesting name of a town. And so I lived in Poughkeepsie and worked in Poughkeepsie for a time. And there's also which I thought that, and I think this adds to it, but there is a serial killer from Poughkeepsie. And I think that, I believe that it wasn't an inspiration, you know, supposedly not an inspiration, has nothing to do with it, but I feel like those things coinciding at the same time kind of added to it, I believe, anyway. Because people don't really reference the movie, especially online, a lot is without referencing the serial killer, which was kind of around where I was around. So it's like an interesting thing to think, like, in that course of that time, that I would have maybe been at the supermarket or the mall where I used to work at, that mall in Poughkeepsie. I was just like, I wonder if that dude just kind of walked by and he's like, just buying some zip ties or Jesus. Some plastic bag. Yeah. Fuck. So there's, you know, again, like, you know, the podcast I do, you know, and like a lot of people do, it's, so there's a true crime aspect, there's a, you know, a kind of a lost film aspect, so anything kind of, yeah, like I think a lot of things happen here that go into the lore of the Poughkeepsie tapes, plus the name isn't that like, oh, the Poughkeepsie tapes, is this like some kind of weird local political thing, you know what I mean, where the comptroller stole money, but so it's a kind of like a benign title, and I think that kind of adds to the whole thing. So I mean, I don't think it's a necessarily a good movie, but I think it's an interesting movie, and it's interesting to me because I used to live in Poughkeepsie. And how many horror movies have the town you used to live in? Probably not that many, right? I mean, I don't, in the world, so it's kind of a rare thing, so I kind of latched onto it.
Yeah.
Is the movie about the serial killer? That was the real serial killer? No, not connected.
No.
Interesting.
They're not connected, but it's like, I don't know, a lot of towns don't have an actual documented serial killer, you know, in a lot of, by definition, and especially, you know, in a town in upstate New York. So I feel like, and that the serial killings happened between, I want to say 96 to 98, and the movie came out in 2007. I mean, I don't know. And it was news. I vaguely remember reading it in the newspaper because, you know, really no internet back then. So I feel like there has to be some kind of
inspiration
to it. Mm. I mean, I don't know. Then the filmmakers aren't tipsy. I feel like I looked into that, and some of it is filmed in Poughkeepsie, but I think those are just some aerials that I noticed.
Yeah.
Like in the opening, if I had to guess, I think the filmmakers are from like Minnesota. So there's Minnesota and there's Los Angeles, because maybe that's where they did some shot. You know, there's a lot of post-production and stuff. Mm-hmm. So I feel like they picked that place because that, I mean, otherwise it was just very random. What's their connection to Poughkeepsie? I haven't found any.
Right.
My take.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
Isn't Vassar also in Poughkeepsie?
It isn't. Vassar's in Poughkeepsie, and where the serial killer lived was very close to Vassar.
Did they catch the serial killer?
Yeah.
Wowee.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Well, that's good. That's good news.
That's good news. Sophia. Finally, some good news.
Well, shall we watch the trailer for this and get into it? Well, let's talk about it.
Yeah,
I'm seeing this trailer, sadistic violence and torture, including terror and graphic descriptions. Fantastic.
Jesus.
And smoking. And smoking.
Oh my God, and smoking. Well,
that, no, 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 thank you.
That should have been number one.
There's fallout out there, please. Do something. Do something. Do something.
If it's a missing person, we have to wait 24 hours.
No, there is blood. There is blood out there. Send the police now.
Today, police made a shocking discovery in Poughkeepsie.
A third body was found here today. A Poughkeepsie couple vanished over the weekend, seemingly without a trace.
Do you mind if I film this? I'm making a little movie about my trip.
Tales.
Oh my God, Hen, this is like your worst nightmare. You hate watching people be scared, and it seems like that's all you're gonna watch in this is people being scared.
I was just thinking that. I was like, no, I don't want to be scared in my own home. No, thank you.
I like that it says coming soon. They were wrong.
Pretty vague. Also, I'm very curious, because are we going to like never see this killer because he or she?
Yeah, that's kind of an interesting device.
Shooting it?
Maybe the killer is all of us. Ooh.
Ooh.
Think about it.
Am I the killer?
I guess I never thought about that.
Oh, wow. This looks upsetting.
It's upsetting. Upsetting is like the perfect word for it, I'd say.
I don't like when that's the correct word.
Oh, my God. Well, should we just get into it? Should we just fucking...
Let's get into it. Let's rip this fucking Band-Aid off.
I have tried a lot of meal kits in my day because I don't like to cook. I need as much help as I can get when it comes to meal times. But a lot of the kits I've tried... You know, they leave a little something to be desired. They're not super great quality, or maybe there's not great variety, or they feel just kind of unhealthy. So imagine my surprise when I found Marley Spoon and discovered it doesn't have to be that way. You can have it all. I'm so happy this podcast is sponsored by Marley Spoon. They created the best tasting meal kit money can buy, and with my code TOOSCARY, you can get up to 25 free meals. They have over 100 meals to choose from each week, so you will not be getting bored. Last night, I made a shrimp burrito bowl that was so good, and tonight I'm making a Shion-style cumin turkey burger with pickled veggies and five-spice fries. Excuse me, am I a five-star chef? You have any idea how boring all the stuff I usually make is? It's such a treat. And usually for something like this, I would pay probably $40 to have something delivered to me. And it would probably be gross and soggy by the time it got here anyways. So thank God for Marley Spoon. And you can customize many of the recipes. So whether you're looking for vegetarian, family friendly, low carb, they got you covered. They also have an online market of pantry essentials like snacks and ready to eat options. I'm telling you, you can have it all. I got a kit to make cookies in my first box. So experience the most personalized meal kit today with Marley Spoon. Head to marleyspoon.com/offer/too scary and use code too scary for up to 25 free meals. That's right, up to 25 free meals with Marley Spoon. One last time, that's marleyspoon.com/offer/too scary for up to 25 free meals. And make sure you use my promo code too scary so they know I sent you.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
I do want to say it does feel, so this movie was made in 2007. Yeah. Feels like the wrong, and maybe this will be part of it, but to me it feels like the wrong choice to make this movie take place in September 2001.
I know.
Well, they talk about that.
Okay, because it felt like they weren't. That's how the people, if you listened, the trailer starts with in September of 2001. I was like, oh shit, and then they don't address 9/11 at all in the trailer. So I was like, huh.
They do in the movie. There's a reason for it.
That's better, because otherwise, huge mistake. Okay.
I would say, like, the movie is, there's like two things happening at once. You have the found footage portion, right? Which is, I guess at the time, is a pretty good, like, you know, Paranormal Activity is around. I'm trying to think of when the first Paranormal Activity came out, but it was kind of coming out around there. Blair Witch was obviously found footage. That's inherently terrifying, especially, you know, if you're watching in 2007, we haven't really been inundated with found footage type stuff and within TV shows, which has been a very popular device in order to be terrifying, because it's inherently grainy and scary and not clear. So when it's not clear, your imagination might be doing 80% of the work. Mm-hmm. So that part is terrifying. And like you said, they indicate a lot, and that's worse. In fact, I think showing it and not indicating it, because when you're indicating it, your worst thoughts are coming through. And when they're showing it, it's like, well, you're showing us what it is. Yeah, that sings. I was like, but in my mind, it could have been 50% worse. And then you have this other part of the movie, which is the kind of the news and the traveling. Mm. And I can't decide if that's meant to be satire. It's intentionally kind of meant to look like that, or that's just how they filmed it to the best of their ability, because it almost seems like not a joke, but it seems like almost a parody of people talking about crime. I don't know if it's the way they shot it or that was their intention. So there's two things happening at the same time, and I don't know what their intention is, but it kind of takes you in it and then out of it. When you hear the people go, you know, when you hear like the cops and the FBI and like the, you know, the forensic specialist, it's just not very, it looks like a sketch.
Yeah.
In a way.
I would say they're like bad actors too.
and
like that's part of it.
That's on, I feel like there's part, it's,
could be.
It feels like it's either on purpose or it's just blurring that line. So in that in itself, but then it juxtaposes with pretty scary, you know, visuals that kind of are the movie, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like that could pretty much be the movie. You can cut out a lot of that other stuff because it's not adding anything to it. In fact, anything, it's taking away from it. Or they're like, hey, this is pretty corny. Here's something very scary to, you know, kind of take you along that thing.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But also something that I saw is that the person who is, you know, the POV of the killer is holding the camera, and they purposely had somebody that was not good at videography. So it wouldn't look very perfect. You know, they're like, oh, let me make sure I get, hold on, I'm going to get over the shoulder. You know, all those things. They had somebody who isn't good at it, which makes it almost like, again, jarring and real. And I thought that was a really cool device. Just, I don't want to make it like I'm just ragging on this movie, but it's something I was like, oh yeah, because if you have like an actual camera person, they might make it look too clean and too safe. You want it to almost be where you're kind of a little out of sorts when you're watching it. So I thought that was a pretty cool device.
Yeah, found footage is tricky. I mean, it's easy to make it less scary. We recently did Paranormal Activity 3, and that was one of my complaints about it, was like, it looks too good. Like, the cameras are too nice, and it makes it less scary. Like, I want it to look like shit. That makes it feel way more real.
Movie, which you probably have covered. I mean, I'm sure
we haven't done that one yet.
Those I feel like they do a pretty, but that's a totally different thing, but they do a really good job. But that's the whole thing, are these, it's all found footage, so, and they're very different. But yeah, I think that is, I also think it's easy to do found footage stuff, especially if it's like really like crappy looking. So you don't really know what you're seeing. And so I think that's it's still a really, really great device, and they do it really well here. And especially if you're watching it in 2007, you're not already burned out from that, like seeing it in movies and TV shows like 10 million times, just like a twist ending now, you know, you see a twist mm-hmm. ending now. It's like, oh, okay. But you know, back when Sixth Sense came out, you're like, whoa, okay. This blew is new.
People's fucking minds.
Blew minds. And you know, I just watched Old and like channel on and yeah, mind not one. Blown. So,
Yeah, the movie basically.
One question I have about the movie, is that even, you know, found footage films usually still follow like the same set of characters, or it's, you know, the same group, and there usually is still like a protagonist and all that. But it's sounding to me like maybe this movie doesn't even have that. Like it's literally just the news anchors and then these tapes.
There's that's happening, but then there's also these cutaway interviews from like experts, and right. you might have like a police person in the car, like looking in the back, kind of be like, hey, we're driving to the blah, blah, blah. And it's like, okay. But then you just cut to like a stat, like a thing where it's like, I'm an expert in this. Here's me kind of explaining science, whatever. And it just seems like, again, almost like a sketch or something like that. It doesn't add anything to it. And it doesn't really give you, it doesn't really give you much information doesn't make it more or less scary once you get to like the good stuff.
So yeah, basically starts with them finding like over 800 tapes filmed from the killer's point of view that are like snuff films basically. And one of the things that they said early on in one of those like expert interviews is that what people don't realize is that any given time there are somewhere between 25 and 50 active serial killers in the US. And I, if you can believe it, I fact checked it. And that is seems to be the case, which is fucking crazy.
Yeah, it's too many.
That's too many. Too many for my liking.
Yeah. I wonder if they're like mostly in certain places. They must be.
I wonder if there's like a map.
If they're in Poughkeepsie, if there's one in Poughkeepsie, one could be anywhere. Like the Kendall Francois, who's this serial killer. Mm-hmm. I know, very kind of cool name.
I know. Hi, I'm Kendall Francois and I murder people.
Yeah, it's like cool name. I'm listening, you know. I don't know, to give a tiny background, he murdered 8 prostitutes, I guess. Mm-hmm. You know, people, you know, I think that was the kind of the demographic, and they were found like in his house. So, and I think his attic. So there is still this thing of finding things in someone's house that I think kind of correlates this movie enough to gives it wings a little bit. And there's no tapes or anything like that, but there kind of is something to that. Plus the idea of like the blank tapes is very, you know, whether in anything in history or whatever, like these, like idea of these recordings and stuff like that, whether it's demonic, you know, exorcisms or something like that. It's always kind of scary, the blank tapes. And when they're VHS tapes, like The Ring or something like that, it's already like a very scary device.
I agree.
800 of them. Get out of here.
Does that mean there are 800 murders?
No, it just, he films like nonstop. He just films a lot.
Okay. So this
Some
is like
of it is
scary,
Will and Grace, I think.
Scary How To with John Wilson.
Exactly. That's exactly right. So we start with like, there's one of the scenes that we're seeing that we go back to a lot is a classroom where someone is teaching about this serial killer. It starts with his first crime, which is him like kidnapping, raping and murdering an 8-year-old girl.
What?
And they just like say it. You don't like see much. I mean, you see like him meeting the girl and like the like, oh, like you don't have to be scared of me. Like that kind of thing. It's like horrible.
Ugh.
Terrible. And then the teacher of this classroom is like, that's nothing. He's just getting started. And I'm like, that's nothing. Like, okay. What?
Like, how much worse can it get?
That just like made me laugh. Like, oh, that's nothing. Like, I don't think that's nothing. Like, no, it's fine if it gets worse, but that's not nothing.
Yeah. In any context, that's the wrong thing to say. I don't care where you're going from there. That's incorrect.
And then it like tracks a few of it goes like chronologically, I guess, through the tapes is what we're meant to believe. And it shows him like getting better at things and doing more like premeditated stuff. It seems like the little girl was kind of a spur of the moment thing, and him getting away with it motivated him to like get bolder.
Mm-hmm.
And it shows, we saw a little bit in the trailer of him like getting in the car with a couple and asking like, oh, can I film you guys, film this? Like, I'm making a movie. And
is he like hitchhiking and they pick him up?
I think so. Something like, okay. Yeah, I think they're supposed to be dropping him off at a gas station. But in the like expert interviews later, we find out like that gas station's abandoned. He probably knew that. He probably knew this road is really empty. And so he's like planning things in a way that now he's like super efficient and premeditated and whatnot.
Ugh.
And that young couple, a very bad thing happens to them.
Okay, let's hear it.
He kills the guy, and then we don't really see what happens. And again, we don't like see a ton of the like gnarlier stuff, but it's all, you're seeing it in your head. Like we said, you're drawing a picture for yourself, and that is worse.
Definitely.
So what happens is he cuts off the man's head and sews it into her stomach, and she somehow survives that. But then they find the body
into her, like inside her, open the stomach, put the head in.
Yes, which I'm not sure of the medical
science
behind this.
And also how someone would survive any of that. Yeah.
I think she does die eventually.
A head is so big.
It's big. Too big to fit in a woman's stomach with her still alive. For sure. But then they like find, they find the bodies, I guess, much later. So the bodies are, I don't know, they're not mummified and stopped that much later, but they just look like, you know, like corpses, old corpses. But we're seeing what happened through the POV of the tapes. And then I think someone says something to a police officer and is like, were you like impressed by his creativity? Like, I don't know. They ask a question or something, and this woman, this police officer, replies, "No, after what he did to Cheryl Dempsey, like I could have nothing but loathing for this man." And I'm like, wait, after not these things that we've already seen?
This is nothing. Wait until you see. Ugh.
Okay.
And Cheryl Dempsey's one of the main people in it, right? From what I remember. Mm-hmm. I think the Cheryl Dempsey character is like one of the main
victims.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's all, it's very bad. He goes into her house and she's in the shower, and it's all very creepy. Him like going to like setting up a camera in a place that can capture what's about to happen while he hides in the closet. We hear that her boyfriend is also there, and they like eventually fall asleep on the couch, and he like sneaks down, kills the boyfriend first, then runs after Cheryl. And one thing that I thought was pretty clever and creative was he chases Cheryl, knocks her down, and then you see him attacking her like through the shadow on the wall, because the camera like falls, so you can only see the shadow of it. And so it's like still looks fucking terrifying, but I'm like, ooh, what a like smart way to film that, because it would be just,
don't need
like,
any gore, you don't need, that's cool.
Yeah, so I thought that was clever. And then one thing that they say a lot in the expert interviews, or I guess after this point, is how he changes his MO a lot. That's like one of his ways that he avoids being captured. And so this is when he starts posing as a police officer and murdering prostitutes, and he gets the name the Water Street Butcher. And we at this point have also seen that Cheryl Dempsey, he did not kill her. He just took her back to his house. She's in the basement of his house, like tied up and basically being horribly tortured. And he calls her slave, and she has to call him master. Or yeah, it's gross. It's very bad. And there's like a scene in which Girl Scouts come to his door trying to sell Girl Scout cookies. And he's like, well, why don't you come inside? And they're like, we're not supposed to come inside. And he says, well, I'm a police officer. So he's like clearly in his police officer uniform. And they're like, oh yeah, that's true. Like, we can trust you. So they go inside.
Great.
And they hear something.
Even if you were not a good enough reason.
No, truly not.
Not even close. And this was like, oh, I hate this part. They like,
no,
the girls hear something and in the basement, it's someone, one of the sex workers that he's like taken and is tied up in the basement, I guess. And they're like, they get scared. And he's like, okay, like you can, why don't you leave? You see yourselves out. And they leave and you're kind of like, well, wait, what? Like, he's a murderer. Why did he just let them go? It's unexpected, I guess. And then he pulls off a tablecloth of the table that he was sitting at. And, Cheryl is like bound underneath the table with no, like, she's not gagged, like her, or she's not even bound. It's like a test of her. He's basically like fucked with her head so much at this point that he's like testing to make sure she won't even try to get help. And so he just like makes her sit there while there's other people in the room to like prove that she won't leave him. Yeah,
because she's so scared.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awful.
Yeah, it's horrible. And so then I guess because he's posing as a cop, they start looking at cops and they find a cop that has been in the areas of all of the murders. And arrest him. And it's kind of clear to us the way that they're talking about it, that it's, this is like not the guy, but at the time they're referring to, they think it was, they're like, with all signs point to him. And it's clear that the real killer has done some work here to set this guy up. Same, like him. He's put fingerprints places of this guy. And this guy is the one being framed, is, does like solo police work, and so he's just like basically in his police car alone all the time, so he has like no alibis for any of the time. And he gets found guilty and gets executed.
Oh my god.
And has like interviews with his son, who is like, I had to like go through thinking my dad was a serial killer, and then like later him getting exonerated when the killings continued.
Oh my God.
And this is where they talk about September 11th. It's like, September 11th happened right afterwards. And so this was like all completely overshadowed. And so nobody like realized that that wasn't the killer. Like everyone thought, oh, like that serial killer got caught. And yeah, they say comments like, you know, any other week, this would have been front page news, but obviously this week it was not, and people didn't hear about it. So that's, I guess, why it's set in that time, just as a way to, because it's doing the thing like Blair Witch, where it's trying to make you think that it's real. And so it's like, oh, well, if this was real, how would I not have heard of it? So I think it's a way to, like a device to make it be like, oh, you didn't hear about it because it was, you were hearing about other stuff. September 11th happened. And so it's, I think that's why they did that.
You really can't make a movie like this using that now, because, you know, it doesn't, there's so many things, a 24-hour news cycle is happening on so many different levels. It would be somewhere. So it does add to that thing where it's like, oh yeah. I mean, you know, back in 2001, it's not like there's a tons of archive stuff for you to look up in 2007, or if you're watching it in 2014 or whatever, you know, if you think you're like, oh, this is real. So it's kind of like a smart thing to do, but you can't get away with a lot of those things as much now, you know, right. and now try to make that happen now. So I feel like, yeah, like this movie kind of came out at that kind of
peak time.
Anything later and you start to lose some of that. So it's like that kind of weird window where probably it not being released in full kind of probably took away from a lot of it. Although a lost film, or like, ooh, why was this shelved? Why can't we watch this? Also kind of, is that, you make it the scarcity probably helps in the long run, because if there wasn't that scarcity, might not be talking about it right now. And the world would be a worse place. We weren't talking about the movie.
I don't even want to think about that. So then we see that he continues his killings. So we're, you know, people realize that that wasn't him. Jesus. And we see through the tapes him kidnapping a woman in a cop car, like a woman asking a cop, thinking she's asking a police officer a question, and him saying like, oh, like I can take you there. We don't like totally, I don't think we totally see what the conversation is, but he's like, oh yeah, just get in the back. I'll take you right there. And so this like woman just gets into the fucking back of a cop car, which you can't get out of. And he takes her back to the basement and ties her up. And there's like, you're not going to like this scene, but I thought it was.
The other ones were fine.
I'll withhold judgment until I've heard the rest of it.
She's tied up and she's close to the camera and she has clear like packing tape wrapped over her mouth. And so you can like see her mouth screaming, which I don't know, just even that kind of stuck out to me as like an interesting choice. But it's like usually they're, you don't see their mouth. So you see her facing camera and you see something like moving slowly in the background toward her.
Oh,
and
God damn it.
It's the guy, but he is walking on his hands and feet, like in a downward dog position. And he has a mask on the back of his head and a mask on his face, double masking.
Okay.
And so he's like waddling towards her in this little like A-frame position, and it's really unsettling and creepy. But yeah, when he stood up and you saw that he also had a mask on his face, it did make me laugh.
So, I kind of like how much we've talked about this before. If you're going to do it, you might as well be enjoying it yourself. And it sounds like he really is.
So I think he's just really having a good time. He's just having a laugh.
He's having a laugh.
All right.
But he comes up next to her and puts his hand next to her throat. And we see he has two needles attached to his fingers. And he just slowly presses them into her throat and she starts like coughing up blood into like the clear tape. And it's so gross, but I thought it was a pretty like creative little kill. Sorry. I know that's gross to say, but I was like, oh, this like looks very scary. They did a good job in this.
The clear packing tape is, that's a
very creepy touch.
That also means that actor probably had a blood capsule in her mouth, and she was spitting like fake blood into her own mouth. Like that sucks.
That still sucks.
Definitely and then to have it not come out for 10 years to be like, movie. People aren't even going to see it. Did I do it for nothing?
Did I do that for nothing?
And then one thing they say also that I thought was cool is in the interviews with the experts, like various detectives and psychologists, is that he makes an effort to make all of his crime scenes like a little different. And so all of the profiles that people write up about him are contradicting. So it's like one profile, they're like, this man is like high functioning. His house will be very clean. And another profile is like, this person is probably a hermit in a very, very messy house. And so he's like throwing them off being able to even come up with an accurate profile. So he's just very good at killing, covering his tracks.
Do you feel like, is it just in movies or is it also in real life that serial killers are like very smart? Is there something, but do you know how like you're more likely to have mental illness if you're very smart? Is there some link between being a sociopath and being very high IQ? Because that's a lot to do effectively.
Jason, do you talk about any serial killers on Ghost Town?
I mean, I mean, I think there's a thing of, you know, usually comes with that is you have a feeling of like, you know, narcissism, superiority. Yep. And with that comes a lot of, you know, nobody gets me, nobody's good enough to be around. You know what I mean? I'm kind of an island on myself. So there is kind of a lot of that, and maybe being possibly only child or whatever. So yeah, right. I think there is a lot of that. And it's also, you know, you think like people, you have to be stupid to get duped into a cult, or you have to be stupid to be a serial killer, you know, and that's not just, you know, neither of those things are necessarily true.
Right.
And, you know, you kind of come to find that, but yeah, usually the person, you know, narcissism and, you know, power and stuff like that usually comes with some intelligence. Cause if you're an idiot, I'm using that word idiot. Like, do you really understand the concept of, you know, narcissism or, you know, superiority and stuff like that? I don't know. But
right.
I feel like that kind of goes hand in hand a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. I think there's also something in our culture where we like accidentally lionize serial killers. Like we are so entertained by them and we love to like watch content about them. And it's always from the serial, like it's always so focused on them. The story is always revolving around them. And
like how incredible they are. And like, look what, like look, just what I heard of like, wow, that's impressive. That's like amazing to pull that off. Because
right.
It's like a normal human can't do that.
Right. Right. Maybe that's what it is. You want them to be different than normal humans. Mm. And part of that is being smarter. I don't know. But I think that I think a lot of people who are serial killers aren't necessarily like smart. I think it's just that a lot of serial killers like kill people who the police don't feel pressure to solve those cases. Uh-huh. Like, you know what I mean? Like it's a lot of people who are sex workers.
Yeah. And, I was going to say when eight sex workers go missing, they're probably not all that concerned until it becomes clear that it's like, oh, maybe right. this is a thing. Yeah. Oh, right. That's much sadder.
Yeah. Let's stay sad. Let's be sad and stay sad. Let's live in that and feel
let's
that.
Let's be deeply. Sad and stay sad.
I love it. Feeling super sad now.
I love that for us.
I really love that for us.
So then in the movie they find his house and they kind of say he wanted us to find it and he's not there and there's not a single fingerprint in the house, but they do find Cheryl, who is like locked in a box, and he also makes her wear a mask like through the whole duration of the film, which spans theoretically like years and years. Like he just always makes her wear this mask. Or how long does it span? No, I guess it's not that long. It just felt like, cause there's 800 tapes. Hmm. So I don't know.
What kind of mask is it?
It's like a full one that goes over your full head. Like those like rubber masks of a woman with like makeup on, kind of like a blow up doll looking mask.
Oh, terrible. Terrible.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not a good one. We don't like many masks, and we can add this to the list of masks we don't like.
Yeah, I don't like that one little bit.
And so they find Cheryl. She is still alive. Mm. They like describe her condition while she's in the taken to the hospital, that she has been like severely, severely tortured, like sexually tortured, physically tortured, malnourished, and they say things too horrible to say out loud. So it's like stuff like that, that it's like your mind just fills in. And it's like, we didn't see any of that. Well, I mean, we didn't see most of that stuff. We saw some bad stuff with Cheryl, but yeah, your mind just really, really fills it in.
Yikes.
And they say it took them like a while, but they like eventually got an interview with Cheryl. And the interview with her is so sad. And she is just so completely traumatized.
Yeah, of course.
And doesn't know how to even talk really to the interviewer. Like they're asking her a question and she's clearly scared of saying the wrong thing because so much of what she has been through is she can only behave in a certain way that was like allowed. And so she just keeps saying like, what do you want me to say? I don't, like, tell me what to say. I don't know what you want me to say. And she's like very, frightened of saying the wrong thing. And then eventually she says, he loved me and he'll come back for me. He like, and it's like clear that he is completely, like fucked her up. And she is, I think, also loves him or is like brainwashed into loving him.
Yeah. Stockholm syndrome.
Yeah. And that's the last thing she says in the interview. And then a little Chiron comes up that says 2 weeks later, Cheryl committed suicide. And in her suicide note, declared love for her love, undying love for her master. And then this is like kind of the ending of the movie, has a little postscript that says, or no, I think it's still in the interviews where someone says there's 27 missing tapes. And it's like, what's on those tapes? Maybe they showed his face, or maybe it was stuff that was just too horrible to even see.
All the other stuff was totally fine.
And oh, and one thing that's fun that they say is like one of the psychologists says, like, well, if you guys are doing this movie on him, one thing that's for certain is he will be at screenings of this. Like, he won't be able to stay away. He's like a narcissist and will want to be the, he'll see this movie as many times as possible and be in as many theaters as he can, which is like clearly a thing that they tried to like make theater goers feel scared of. And then it just never went to theaters, which is a bummer for them.
God, I wish I had more detail on why they didn't, if it's really just because it's too gruesome. Cause I mean, it is pretty fucked up.
But it also could just be things, just money, or, you know, a lot of times where it's just things didn't work out, distribution didn't happen, and all that, you know, that kind of stuff, or just wasn't feasible. But or could, yeah, it could be those, it could be those things. But and I feel like other movies have come out, like the, what is it, the Human Centipede, yeah, and stuff like that. Yeah, I feel like a lot of things have kind of come out, but I think it's, you know, they made this movie for it to be like this found footage thing. So it was not, it was made to be a horror movie. It was made to be this thing where you didn't know if it was like, is this real? But, you know, I think the fact that it did get re-released was probably in the big picture, probably better for it than letting it in 2007, because I don't know how robust the internet would have been getting this around. Because yeah, Blair Witch was a pretty big thing. That had a pretty decent, it made a lot of money and had a pretty decent theatrical release. Where this, I don't know, would this have had that, or would it just been like one of those things where, you know, it ended up on Shudder anyway? So I feel like it may have been a beneficial to that, because everyone loves a lost film.
Yeah. You know?
And so when they made it, I think they made it to come out in 2007 and experience it in 2007, not in 2014 or 2021, because it kind of loses a little bit of that, because, you know, it's like not, because you can go on IMDb and be like, you're all alive.
Yeah, this is a movie.
You know?
Yeah, yeah, this isn't real.
Because we rush to, like, you know, when you watch something, you know, I do. I mean, I can't, without looking at a filming location or where do I know this person from? So
I
by that alone, you know, it's not a documentary. You know, it's not real. You know, in 2007, there might be a little less that, because iPhones were barely out. I know. Crazy.
Crazy.
Don't even want to think about a world like that.
Don't even bring that up.
But the psychology behind experiencing this, I try to think like technologically and like what's going on and what's like available. I feel like the impact then is a lot different than the impact now, but at least people love to find something that, oh yeah, this came out, it really didn't have a wide release, I want to watch it because I just love horror movies. And the fact that it wasn't available and now it is available makes me want to watch it. And it's called the Poughkeepsie Tapes, which is such a kind of a benign title in itself,
it's so not benign. The movie is the opposite of benign.
No, and I don't know, you know, I didn't pick this because like this is a great movie and I believe in the message. It's not a thing. It was, you had a list and I picked because I couldn't get it, and this is on your list.
Yes, this was a listener request.
So whoever the listener was, yeah, you blame them.
Take it up. We'll take
you
it
can
up.
Go fuck yourself, man.
But it jumped out at me because I wanted to do an episode of Ghost Town about Kendall Francois, and did a little work on it. Did some on TikTok on it. I never actually made the thing I might now after talking about it. But it kind of jumped out. I was like, I slim Poughkeepsie, and I like, I don't know, hometown stuff. Like a lot of people don't have, like, some people don't even have a hometown serial killer. Think about it.
Think about that.
Yeah. That's really scary.
That's really scary. That's
you're
really
lucky.
Without.
You're really lucky.
You're really lucky.
Thank you.
I had really fucked up dreams after this movie, if you can believe it. I had like crazy nightmares last night.
I'm not surprised.
I woke up at like 4:30 in the morning, which is a pretty spooky time. And I hate to report that the motion detector light outside of my bedroom just kept turning on and off.
No.
And I couldn't fall back asleep. So I was awake for like 2 hours, just being like, wonder who's walking around outside my bedroom. I would never get up and check. That's the rule. Don't look.
Don't look. And then they're not there. They can't be there if you're not looking. Jesus Christ.
Also, my mom is in town right now and we almost watched this together, but she went out to dinner instead. I was like, thank fucking God.
Would she have been? Yeah. What would your mom have thought?
I think she would have absolutely hated every second of it. I'm sure she would have like walked out of it.
She should.
Yeah. She doesn't. Yeah. She doesn't like horror movies in general. And I think this is a pretty deep end one. As far as yeah, like gore and torture and that kind of thing. I didn't actually feel like terribly scared. It's just like just upsetting disturbing. And disturbing. Yeah. And then I was scared at 4:30 in the morning when the motion detector lights were going on. Yeah. But Jason, thank you so much for coming on the pod.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
It was a delight. Aside from all of the subject matter.
Aside from everything we talked about, it was delightful.
And
yeah,
Jason, can you tell us a bit about where people can find you, where our listeners can find you, can find Ghost Town?
You can find Ghost Town wherever you get listen to podcasts or ghosttownpod.com. And I said my Instagram, if you like filming locations in general or for horror movies, my Instagram is TheJasonHorton. I'll be on the new season, I believe, of the History Channel's History's Greatest Mysteries next season.
Cool.
I've done some episodes of that. Yes, I've been, I don't know what, if I'm in it, you know, but I've been doing some episodes of that, talking about some, I can't say what, but talking about subject matter that your listeners might be interested in. So Lawrence Fishburne is the host, and I'm like an expert. I don't know, whatever I am.
That's amazing. Yeah. That's very cool. So,
there's that. And then, I'm working on my second book, but my book, Abandoned Historic Los Angeles, Neon and Beyond, I'll just show it to you because I don't know if you can see it.
You got to put it in front of you.
We'll tag it. We'll put it in the episode description.
It's hiding.
So that's out. And if you like, I mean, you live in Los Angeles or not, and you like to see cool vintage signs, abandoned and historic places, that's available. And it was LA Magazine's top books of 2020 about Los Angeles. So
amazing.
Cool.
I guess as an author, I like horror movies, you know what I mean? Like I like to start things off saying as an author now. I don't know, it's just something I do. People love to hear it too. They're like, wow, it's really interesting.
You gotta start.
We never get a chance to do that.
And so many
as a
so
rich many, author, excuse me, as a well, young
younger
wealthy.
And wealthier every day.
Pretty much the main character protagonist of every horror movie is an author. So it's really striking a chord, you know.
A published author.
Yes.
As a published author. It's not self-published. Just want to let people know it's not nothing wrong with that. It's not self-published. I don't have what it takes to publish a book. I have to have someone else do it and get the most of the money from it. So it's great. It's great. They get the most.
That's great.
The least. It's great. Yeah.
Happy for them.
Love it. Love Hollywood.
Well, we will put all of the info to find Jason and Ghost Town and his books in the episode description. Everybody check that out. And that's all we got for you guys today. So from all of us here at Too Scary Didn't Watch, goodbye.
Goodbye.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Too Scary Didn't Watch. I'm here to remind you to head on over to Apple Podcasts where you can rate, review, and subscribe if you had as much fun as we did. We're also on Twitter and Instagram at TSDW Podcast, although admittedly not as great about updating our Twitter as we are on our Instagram. We are also on Patreon at patreon.com/TSDW Podcast. You can sign up for access to things like bonus episodes, bingo cards, send in suggestions, all that type of thing. I think that's it, except for the fact that we love you forever and ever and ever and ever and ever. Okay, see you next week.